Listeners, I welcome you to Afterthought. Time and time again, you've reached out to us, and I stand before you today to say that we have heard your call, and we shall answer. The question laid before us is indeed of a great and vital nature, and we take up this mantle of responsibility with no small degree of trepidation. However, there comes a time where a man must stand up, display the courage of his conviction, and answer the challenge of telling essential truths. Today is that day. We are those men. Plessy versus Ferguson. Chunky versus Smooth. Pepperoni versus Sausage. Xbox versus PlayStation. These are the questions of our age. The time has come. To Afterthought in the Mornings. This is Wacky Jeff here with my co-host, the Armadillo.
Oh, yeah. It's time to get this radio program rolling.
It's a seven wiener morning here. All right. Welcome back to Afterthought, the podcast where we get together and discuss whatever the hell we want.
Aw, I'm not the Armadillo anymore.
You're still the Armadillo.
Yeah.
There you go.
You're always the Armadillo in my heart.
Yeah. You're always the Armadillo in my heart and my balls.
That's good.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
So, this is the podcast where we get together and talk about something that was brought to our attention during our last episode of System Mastery. This week, I believe John wanted to discuss, I'm sorry, the Armadillo wished to discuss the role of religion in gaming.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a topic that, a lot of people have gone over. Shit, we've gone over it before in some past System Masteries.
Two or three times now, yeah.
Yeah. But it's one of those things that I figured you could spend some time talking about, because it's odd in that so many RPGs really want to do it, and yet they don't seem to have a very good grasp on exactly how they want to implement it, or what it means for the world at large if they do certain things with their religion.
Sure. Why don't we break it down to a couple of questions? First of all, how important should religion be in gaming? Do you think it's a big deal? Should we really be trying to pack it into games? For me, I feel like I run into this problem when I encounter things like religion in gaming, and this is going to sound funny because I'm going to say it's just the same as when I see those fan translations of how to put, like, My Little Pony in role-playing games, and I'm like, why? What do you... Are you so tribalized that you need to incorporate the thing that defines you into literally everything you do? Like, oh my gosh, I can't play Dungeons and Dragons unless I get to say clopping a lot. Or I can't get my head around a role-playing game unless Jesus is in the mix.
See, and I think that's the difference that we're really talking about is if you're talking about a game that's like, oh yeah, I have to always insert, like, specifically Jesus or like the Judeo-Christian idea of a god into everything, then that's odd. Like, that shouldn't be in everything, especially because that's going to, unless your game is about that, like Heaven and Earth was, like we just reviewed, then it's just going to twist it into being really either out of place or just makes your world seem not real.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem at all with religion having an important place in games. I just feel it's weird when it comes on a little strong.
Well, religion and, by extension, faith is such an integral part of just the human existence.
I don't know. I feel like you could pull faith out of that show and it wouldn't really change it all that much.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you don't really need two slayers.
No, you already have two slayers.
I mean, so come on. Well, you had Kendra and then she died.
You need three slayers as well. Oh, did she die? I didn't even...
Oh, yeah. That's why you have faith.
Oh.
You gotta have faith. Yeah. Once Kendra dies.
I thought you gotta have faith because you took my heart away.
but the idea of belief in something is so ingrained into us, and whether that's belief in a religious idea or just belief in something in general.
Sure.
That's just something that we have. We have to have a belief in something as a people. And having that in your game makes sense. And the problem comes from when the actual given religion or faith ideas don't make sense within the game you've got.
I'm sorry, I should be contributing more, but I'm just sad to hear that Kendra died.
Aw.
Anyway, yeah, I agree. Faith is definitely an interesting component that you can put into your games.
Yeah, it lets you play with characters that let you do certain ideas and stories that you wouldn't otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the classic questioning of faith or questing to find redemption and things like that are one of the classic story tropes that you find throughout history. And so denying your game the ability to use anything that would come from religion or faith seems like you would just be limiting yourself a little too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it mostly happens when your ideas don't mesh with the rest of the world you've done. We had talked about this in Dark Earth.
Dark Earth Legends.
Dark Ur the Legends.
Yeah, Dark Ur the Legends.
And the Fantasy Imperium.
Mm-hmm.
In that you had this idea of, oh yeah, and there's people that have faith, and then some people that have a different religion, and some people believe whatever. And then you give a definitive answer to what's actually real, and have those people have magical powers that prove it.
Yeah.
Like, you can't have faith as a concept in a game where it is provable. Like, then it's not faith, it's just, oh yes, I don't have faith that there's a god. It's I know there's a god because I see him regularly on Thursday for a poker game.
I don't know if that's necessarily true. I mean, there was a point in my life where I still had faith in the American legal system, and I know that exists.
Oh, no, you had faith in a just system.
Oh, okay, that's right.
So you could still have stories of faith that I believe this god that I know exists is good, and yeah, he could be a total dickbag.
So that fixes your problem right there, where you know God exists, but is he going to do what he's supposed to?
See, and that is a different thing. But when you have your story be like, oh, and some people don't believe in Farty Balls, the god of whatever the
farty
fuck.
Farty Balls.
Yeah, the god of ball farts. Farty Balls, the god of ball farts. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and good night.
Try the pepper steak.
That is the kind of highbrow humor you can expect from us here at the System Mastery Podcast.
Can you think of a specific role-playing game that's done religion well?
Actually, Heaven and Earth did a good job of saying our base premise is that the whole Christian faith is correct in that there is a God, there is a devil, there was Jesus, but none of the characters in there get, like, divine powers from them, really.
No, and you don't get to meet them.
No, nobody meets God or the devil or Jesus.
And it left some of the big questions open. It did still have the whole condemned to hell thing in there for, what, like, if you made a pact with a demon or something. But it didn't really tell you what the afterlife was.
No, it didn't go into, and heaven is like this, and hell is like that, and God is specifically like this, and he looks like this.
Yeah, God be like this, where he's black people.
Yeah. You know, when God be up at the mall, he like whoop, whoop, doop, doop, and then Satan's up at the mall and he's like, noop,
noop, noop, noop. Satan's the nerd in this
example? Yeah, Satan is obviously the nerd in this. That's why he rebelled. God was always giving Satan swirlies and shoving him into lockers.
Satan got tired of being a beta, so he took the red pill. What I'm getting from you here.
Yeah, that's exactly true.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I actually kind of agree. I mean, I didn't really particularly like Heaven and Earth, but I have done some after System Mastery research into this and have learned that a lot of people really enjoy the third edition of that game. That apparently after he tossed the dice...
Yeah.
He threw away the dice that... in exchange, he threw away the cards and replaced them with dice which he had previously tossed away... Then, the game actually turned out to be really good and interesting. The first edition, I guess, is pretty well known to be kind of a silly bad thing, so we didn't do too much damage here.
No, well, this edition very much feels like a rough draft of, I had some ideas and I spitballed and I threw some spaghetti at the wall and here's what came up.
Yeah, plus I got a lot of ideas on life. And here they are. Anyway, so I would agree. I think it actually does a fairly solid job.
And honestly, I would say that having the base idea of religion from certain games that kind of ignore the concept of, like, really having a faith-based thing, say like D&D.
Sure.
The religion in that is very much Everyone knows there are these gods. There are clerics with powers for these gods. It's not a matter of belief in them as much as it's a matter of worship. Yeah. And that is the difference there of worship versus just
nurture.
Faith.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Worship versus nurture.
The age-old debate.
Yeah.
Okay. And also, that game has a very complicated afterlife system that doesn't necessarily have to do with the gods in the game. Like, you die and you go to the positive plane of something or other. I've forgotten my outer planes cosmology of old Dungeons and Dragons.
Well, I mean, it depends on if you're...
like, alignment or something?
Yeah, if you're believing, like, am I gonna go to, like, fucking Mount Celestia or whatever?
Yeah,
or am
I going to the Abyss
to...
or Mechanus or, Bytopia.
That's
where I'm going, let me tell you.
Hey!
Bytopia, don't ask too many questions, have a good time, here's your bucket.
Bucket?
You wouldn't know unless you were bi. I'm sorry, buddy.
You don't get your bi bucket.
Until you cross that threshold.
Oh, good. That's good.
All right, so yeah, that D&D, I think, does a fairly decent job just by making sure that people... D&D is a world where atheism just isn't really a thing.
No.
Like, everyone knows, yes, there's some gods or whatever, and you can worship them, but if you don't, it's not like you automatically go to hell, because it's not a monotheism.
No, it's not a your belief dictates anything that's going to happen outside of if you're a cleric or not. Like, I could believe in, as far as I don't worship any of the gods, I don't give a fuck about any of them, and that has zero repercussions on me as a person.
That would make for a really weird D&D game. I've never even thought of the idea of having a D&D game where, like, all the followers of St. Cuthbert just go nuts and try and kill all the followers of, like, Corallon Lorethian or something. They're just like, fuck you guys, St. Cuthbert is the good one.
Well, I mean, you do have some opposing gods where you'll have, like,
oh yeah,
Cord and what's his nuts, the guy who's Cord but evil.
Farty Balls.
Oh yeah, Farty Balls, that's right. I forgot about that.
Glad I could help.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that.
How about the only one I can remember, which is Groomsh versus Corallon?
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, there are plenty of opposing gods, mm-hmm. and that's a thing you can do. You can say, oh yeah, you know, followers from this god hate the followers from this god because fuck them, for real though.
Well, I kind of like the idea of a game where it would straight up just be two of the lawful good gods going after each other because they're just wrong. Like, you know, it's just,
you've interpreted the law wrong.
Like Moradin versus Pelor, where they're just like, hey, fuck you, buddy. The dwarf one is way better than the sun one.
Nah, fuck you, buddy. The sun's all the way.
Sharks.
Jets.
Sorry. We're a little loopy today.
It's all that allergy medication. That's what it is.
That must be it.
Yeah, I've been getting too much of the Claritin D.
I've been drinking a lot of that asthma medication. The kind that you buy at Vaughn's.
Yeah.
Yeah. The kind that's labeled vodka, but it's asthma medication.
Good job.
Okay. What would you say is a really, really bad attempt to stuff religion into a role-playing game?
Well, I already mentioned the two that we've reviewed before.
Dark Earth Legends.
Dark Earth, Fantasy Imperium, any of the games where especially any of the shit farmer games, because
mm-hmm.
any of the time where you have the game where like, oh, you're in medieval Europe because we fucking love putting everything in medieval Europe.
Oh, yeah.
Or fantasy, not Europe.
Yeah.
And then everyone's like, yeah, there's obviously the church is super huge, and they've got lots of influence, and everyone believes in the not-pope. And then the not-cardinals also have magic powers that they get from God.
But then there are some atheists.
And then there are these, I don't know, Muslims, but they don't worship the right God, so they don't have superpowers.
Oh, like, yeah.
You fucking really?
I've seen that a couple of times, too. I think that showed up in Furry Pirates.
Yeah.
Where, like, the Australians and shit didn't have any powers, but the you could be a priest of, like, the European god of furries, and you'd get some cool priesty spells.
Yeah. Any time where you have made the decision that I'm using real-world actual religions, and then I decide which one is right and give them powers and still include these other religions, I go, no, because you've already done the conceit that this religion is correct, and it is demonstrably so, such that you wouldn't have other things. If someone was running around a day going like, hey man, I can smite people. Like, I just call down lightning and I turn water to wine and I'm awesome.
And then, it's because I'm a Baha'i.
Yeah. And everyone would be like, oh, well, shit.
Sign me up for your confusing religion.
The Baha'i there.
Sign me up, Rainn Wilson, only known famous Baha'i.
Yes. Wilson Phillips, only known band that loves Baha'i.
Wilson Fisk, only villain that's a Baha'i. Have you seen that show yet?
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah?
Oh, this is the afterthought about Daredevil now.
Yeah, we just switched it. Now we're talking about Daredevil. That second episode, the fight scene at the end.
Holy shit, man. It's so good.
Yeah.
Because it just looks painful for everyone involved.
And he's so tired by the end of it. By the end of that fight, he's like, he throws a punch and he falls to the ground, collapsed and tired because he just fought 10 dudes.
Oh, yeah. No, it's great.
Yeah.
If you haven't watched Netflix Daredevil, do yourself a favor. Watch that shit.
And spoiler alert, there was a point near the end of that series where the Chinese woman, Madame Gao, announces that she has to leave. Have you seen the whole thing yet?
Yes.
So there's a point where she says, I have to leave, and the other guy's like, oh, you have to go back to China? And she goes, no, considerably farther away. And for, I know, I know that she's from one of those Chinese hidden cities like Kunlun and so on, so she's going to be part of the whole Iron Fist show. But there was a point, for just a second, where I went, oh shit, she's a Skrull.
No, it's just going to be like, my people need me. Just beamed up.
Okay, this has been the, or do you want to just keep talking about Daredevil? Are we done now?
No, I think we're done with Daredevil.
Because Vincent D'Onofrio, man.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of issues of religion and faith and morality.
It's a very Catholic show. No, it's true.
Well, he's a very Catholic person. All you needed was Nightcrawler to show up.
Hi there, I'm Nightcrawler. You technically have the rights to me here because this is a TV show and not a movie.
Yay!
Goodbye!
Guten Tag! Because he's German.
Because he's German. Guten Tag, I have to return to circus.
Wiener Schnitzel.
Also, I can teleport. I think I've hit the marks. Bamf!
Yes.
Okay.
So yeah, I'd say more than anything in a game, especially if you were looking at making a game or writing something up for a game, whether it's you're a game designer or you're creating a world in some system that you're using, if you're going to include religion or faith, make sure that you actually have, one, a reason to do so. You know, if you're going to have a religion and faith in there, make it so that it's part of the world without just being something that makes no sense. If it's a dominant religion because it's the only one, play with that. What is the world like? Because there is actually only one God and everyone knows it.
Mm-hmm.
What does that make the world look like?
Are there still other religions? I mean, it certainly is possible that people simply believe that that God, while capable of granting godlike powers, isn't a God.
Well, I mean, you also have the idea of, like, the various sects within sure. that. We do have a shitload of different types of Christians.
Yeah, absolutely. Or, for that matter, think about how Rifts works with religion. Rift's religion is always these people, and they claim to be gods, but actually they're just squirmy balls of tentacles deep in space. They're lying to you and taking names that they read in, like, Dolaire's Book of Greek Myths. Huh. They're just like, blah, 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 I'm not a squirmy ball of gross. I'm, Dionysus. Yeah.
I'm Diplodocus?
I'm a Diplodocus. I'm a defunct Apatosaur variation. Buddy. I was going to explain Defunct Money now.
Yeah, everyone remember Defunct Money, head of the best band ever.
$7,000 in motion?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry, we're way off topic here. Okay. But no, you can do, I mean, that's the whole, where the concept is, there are people who are aware, oh, those gods aren't even gods, they're just monsters, they can die like we can. Sure, they can give you powers, but that doesn't mean that they created us, they don't have dominion.
And of course, that is one of the other things to think about is this god an actual, like, omnipotent, omnipresent god? Or is it just a being with godlike power? Is this something that you would be able to stat out and have the PCs fucking fight? Because that is another thing that I think was the problem with D&D, is you made gods and then were like, and this is how many HP that god has. You're like, oh man, I'm gonna go punch that god.
I got my copy of first edition Deities and Demigods right there.
Yep.
Yep. Although, it pales in comparison to a book we have coming down the pipe for you guys, which we found the armor class for the Virgin Mary in.
And it's true. It's so good.
Yeah,
everything is wonderful.
No hyperbole. I have the armor class for the Virgin Mary, and we will let you know what it is. Coming soon. Stay tuned.
Yeah.
It's brought to you by Michelob Ultra.
Are you ready to have a bad time, but still be drunk? Michelob Ultra.
Get in a fight.
Maybe that guy said some things. Maybe he didn't. Better to punch him.
That's the best slogan for Michelob Ultra I've ever heard. Michelob Ultra, your truck's probably not big enough. What are those, underhead cams? Pussy. Here's my knowledge of cars right there. I assume that there's such a thing as underhead cams.
Yeah, underhead cams.
Yeah, why not? I
assume that's my favorite porn site, underhead cams. Underheadcams.com.
I just figured underhead cams are like the Zwerf Neblin of the car parts world. Like, they're a cam that lives deep in the earth and can talk to Beat Badgers.
The fuck is a samoflange?
While I'm talking?
All right. So, sure, why not? That can be about it for religion.
Okay. Religion is a nuanced and complicated issue. There are many viewpoints, and those were some of them.
Yeah, just try to think about it for, like, a good minute. Don't just throw, like, yeah, also, the church is here. Moving on.
Fair enough. I think the important thing for us, because neither of us are especially religious people. I mean, you've got a particularly religious upbringing, and I don't, but neither of us are especially religious people now. But it's still, that doesn't mean that we don't want to see religion in games. We want to see it treated well.
Yeah, I mean, in the same way that I'm like, yes, neither am I actually a wizard, but I would like the magic system to be good. It doesn't matter what I personally believe, as long as the system within the game is good.
But I also want to be respectful.
Oh, yeah.
Of religion.
You don't want it to just be like, and Christians all get +1 to their saves because they've been saved through Christ, and Muslims are actually all neutral evil.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing I would like to see avoided. Just like how the occasional book you find that has stat modifications based on human races.
Oh, yeah. God, that's awful.
Oh, ugh. So, there you go. We just want to see it treated respectfully and thoughtfully. That's all.
Yeah.
Great.
There you go.
How about we move on to some listener questions?
Yeah, listener questions. You write in and we answer.
Only if you're topless.
The armadillo's coming at you, rolling your way with listener questions.
Right after this message from Michelob Ultra.
Hey, bro. Have you tried Michelob Ultra?
Indeed I have.
Isn't it, like, the best?
Did you just call me gay?
Dude. Let's go.
All right.
Michelob Ultra. It's go time.
Listener questions. Oh, fuck. No one's going to listen to this at all.
Oh, that's going to make me so happy.
Let's start with discuss the difference and relative merits between cards and dice as the random element in games, won't you? Also, you guys have great butts.
Oh, thank you.
From Claire.
Oh, thank you, Claire. merits and flaws between the cards and dice as the random element. The dice is a good on-the-fly element. I especially like dice if you're doing a system that is very combat-focused and has a lot of minutiae to it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing a D&D and you've got, you know, 5 attacks in a round and you also have to make saves against things, dice are really good. Because you can always roll really quickly for whatever you need.
You can roll more than one of them at a time.
Yeah.
It's easy to keep track of them. They are visible to everybody.
Yeah, it is a good way to just get through a lot of things quickly.
There is never a point at which you will have to shuffle the dice.
Yeah. It's never unavailable for what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
So I think dice is good for that. Whereas cards, I think, have a really interesting mechanic to them. You'd just be looking at them as more... You'd want to have a hand of them because they're cards.
Cards are tactile. I think that's the big difference you get them. I mean, there certainly is a tactile pleasure to be had from rolling dice. I mean, that's half the... I mean, you work at a game store. How often in every given day does some random person come up and dig through all of the dice at the counter forever?
Literally at least once an hour.
Yeah. And they're looking for, like, a D20 that rolls well. Like, they'll actually sit there rolling a D20.
Oh, yeah. They'll pick a D20 out, roll it a few times, go, nah, that one isn't good, and pick a different one and roll that. And I'm like, okay.
So there's a tactile pleasure to be taken from dice, but there's a certain kind of feature to cards. There's a good feeling about having a hand of cards that this is your power level, or this is your array of abilities you have.
Well, cards also let you see ahead of time.
Yes.
The dice are more of a random mechanic. You just roll. Maybe you got something awesome. Maybe you got on a hot streak. Maybe you're on a cold streak. But either way, it's going to be completely random. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you have a hand of cards or even just power cards, you're looking at them and you know what you've got.
Yes, that's
true. It is a set given quantity.
Yeah.
And how you play with that then would be where the difference really comes in.
And there's a nice communal feeling to cards. When you pull a card off the top of the deck and flip it, it's almost like everyone at the table is involved.
Yeah, if you're going with random cards, whereas you don't have a, like, handful of cards, and you're just, I'm going to flip a card at random and see what happens, at that point, you may as well be rolling a die.
Yeah. Oh, and the other thing is that dice don't traditionally have face card type stuff to them.
Yeah, so you can add in weird effects, or you can just say, whatever this goes up through, like, I guess, 13 instead of...
It's 13, yeah. It's four decks of 13. Because yeah, I was thinking the other day about this, because we have a question coming up. But yeah, there's a certain sense of mystery to cards that the dice don't necessarily have. I mean, granted, that's entirely sense-based. Mostly, it's just two different types of random number generator.
Yeah, and how you want to generate your random numbers, that's fine. Do whatever you want.
Yeah.
But if you're going to use one system versus another, probably use it for a reason that is specific to that.
That's true. The few games we've read so far that have used cards have definitely tried to work the cards in. They haven't just been random element generators. I mean, with Heaven and Earth, we had all that weird tarot stuff in there.
Yeah.
And then the other game that we've read so far that used dice was, or sorry, cards was Deliria, where you were supposed to, and that was because Deliria was LARPy.
Yeah. Well, you didn't want to have dice because dice would break you out of the moment more than a card would.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a LARPy player playing a nice game of Deliria, you don't want to bend over to roll cards because your big tits are going to pop out of that corset.
Yes, mine are.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
It's true.
Or you're going to have to stop smoking for even a second. What I'm saying is LARP players have a type.
That's all I'm saying.
That's all. All right, so there you go. Those are the basic differences. I feel like cards are useful, again, for LARPing or for, like, a more complicated play. Like, I've seen games out there where you actually draw a hand and try and assemble poker deck hands to play for your powers. So that sort of thing is fairly interesting. If you want to have a fairly more complicated resolution system, cards can provide that. So, okay, let's jump right ahead to the very next question, which is also about cards here on CardCast. How would you design a resolution mechanic that used playing cards to take advantage of the properties and probabilities of cards in a way that couldn't be done more easily with dice? And this question comes to us from Ryan.
Okay.
Philippi. So,
yeah.
Again.
God damn it, Ryan Philippi.
We love Ryan Philippi here.
Here on the System Mastery Podcast, Ryan Philippi is a good friend of ours.
It's true. Okay. So, I thought about this for a while, and it's tricky. Because a lot of the things that you would immediately think to do with a card system, you could also do with a properly thought out dice system. Like, for example, it's very easy to say, all right, cards. I'm going to lop off the kings. So now every set is 12 instead of 13. So I don't have to get a D13. Now I just have D12s. I get one in four colors. And then I put them in a bag. And I pull one out of that bag and roll it. And what do you know? I just rolled the seven of blue, which is hearts. I rolled the seven of hearts. There you go. It's just that easy. So it can't be something that's just numbers because you can do it with dice.
Yeah. You need to be doing something, like we had said, that actually works with with the card mechanics.
Yes.
So one of the best things I would say is you want to have a hand. A random draw of a card is unsatisfying. It's basically a random number generator, and you can already do that with dice easily. But if you have a hand, it lets you, like I was saying before, you have a knowledge ahead of time of what you've got available to you. And it gives you that wonderful feeling of being able to slap a card down and say, all right, I'm using this.
Yeah. There's a reveal element to cards, which I'm not sure that I like, because I've always been for transparency in games. I like it when everyone can see every other die roll.
Well, I think if you have an open area for what is happening with the game master.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's this particular character, for them, you only draw randomly for NPCs.
Sure.
Or if they just have a static, like, I'm considered to always be playing like a seven. And like, that's what I play on every turn.
Sure. Yeah. It's very, that lets you set, it's almost like just setting an easy difficulty for dice. We just say, oh, monsters generally tend to have a defense value of seven. You have to roll a seven or higher on 2d6 to hit them. It's the same thing that way. It's fine.
But I think with having the players have their own hand of cards mm-hmm. that they keep secret, it gives you, as the mechanic, that feeling of being in control and that the joy you get from revealing you're going to do something.
Yeah, you just fell into my trap card or whatever.
Yeah, when you get to go, oh, but I've been holding on to, you know, the Ace of Spades this entire time, and everyone's like, oh, burr, 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 burr.
Okay, so I think one of my biggest problems I have with using cards in the system is that it's going to require constant shuffling. Otherwise, the game's going to get less random.
Yeah.
And that's because I am a card counter. When I'm playing poker with my friends or blackjack or whatever, I'm a card counter. That's what I do. I'm a big, huge nerd, and I count cards. So for me, if I'm nearing the end of a long night of gaming, and I'm looking at those last 20 cards and going, all the face cards are out of there, and you have to roll face cards to win, I'm just going to not roll. And people are going to be asking me, what do you do during your turn? Let's see, what can I accomplish without rolling? I will talk to the blacksmith.
Yeah, I mean, you want to have...
It's got to be constantly recycled.
A constant reshuffle, or you're just using, like, six decks or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think, as far as the actual resolution mechanic, there are a few different ways you can do it. One is, of course, the hand of cards. We had briefly discussed before doing, like, an actual game of, like, you do blackjack or whatever.
Yeah, and then you have to come up with ways to add character power to it. So you say things like, oh, well, my character's a fighter, so for him, sevens and eights can also count as sixes and fives.
Yeah, it's... If you do something with dice, it lets you get fiddly with numbers very easily.
Yeah.
You know, if I just say, I've got a +3 to hit, I'll roll a die and add +3. If you're playing with cards, unless you're using them like dice, it's harder to do that.
Yeah.
When we were doing the Duckman RPG that we made up, trying to work out a plus and minus system to craps that did anything was ridiculous.
I don't think we did. There's someone who's going to be trying to play that in a couple of days, and I'm really looking forward to their trip report, but I feel like it's way too easy to game that, because you get this to the point where you're like, oh, I'm +4 to something. That means you can hit anything. You can turn any failure into a success or any success into a failure.
Oh, yeah.
So it's going to be real weird to see the report that comes back from them.
And that's the problem with if you've got like, oh yeah, we'll just do a hand of blackjack every time you try to accomplish something is, okay, but where does player agency come in?
Yeah, why do I have a character sheet?
Yeah, if I just get dealt a bad hand, how can my character overcome that?
Yeah. Well, you just keep saying hit me.
Yeah. Quit trying to hit me and hit me.
This is a problem you're going to run into if you try to just adopt casino games into your RPG, is that casino games have an edge towards the house.
Yeah, there's always an edge for the house, and there's always that problem of, for most things, the house also doesn't reveal anything until you know whether, like, did you succeed or lose, now I reveal.
Yeah.
So I think you'd have to change, like, the resolution mechanic couldn't just be a straight card game.
Yeah, it would have to be something modified. I mean, I could definitely see something that would apply some value to poker hands. Like, if you pull 10 cards and you say, all right, I need to use these for my next 3 actions, and, you know, it's possible for me to play a flush, but that uses 5 of the cards in my hand, so that means I really go in flashy to get that success, and do I even have anything in the other 5 cards I can use for my next 2 actions, or do I need to just sacrifice one of those to a failure? I could see things like that. It basically turns the game from random dice mechanics into a little bit of randomness at the beginning, and then resource management after that.
Yeah, and I think that's the big thing with cards is, it ends up being a resource of when do I want to expend certain things.
And the funny thing is, I talk about poker hands, and we've already reviewed a game that used dice for poker hands.
That's
true.
That's
what Cthulhu Tech did.
Yeah.
So, anyway, it's very hard to come up, because they're really very similar. They're both just random number generators. And one of them's got a little more flourish and a little more art.
Yep.
And that's, but there are definitely some values to cards. I think that there are good card games out there. We haven't touched Deadlands, for example. My understanding is that uses cards.
Yeah.
So there you go. But let us know. Is Deadlands any good? I haven't read it. And I never will. Okay, second question from Ryan is, what's the most innovative game mechanic you've encountered that actually worked, without just feeling like a gimmick?
Well, thing is, anything that is an innovative game mechanic is going to essentially be a gimmick.
I have no problem with gimmicks. I love gimmicks.
No, I'm not saying that it's bad. It's just, you know, if I'm doing something and it's not just, you know, rolling dice, then it's going to feel like a gimmick.
Yeah. But again, that's got no problem to me. I like gimmicks. I like it when a game does something a little bit outside the box, except when it's tarot cards.
Yeah. Well, you know, meh. Okay. Honestly, I'm even fine with that as long as it's simple enough to resolve. The big problem with having, like, our resolution mechanic involves looking up a chart of, you know, 50 different things.
Yeah.
Like, okay, great.
I like the twist horror RPG in which you have to resolve things by playing a game of Twister. It gets extremely convoluted by the end.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's another one where you have to jump on a slip and slide and see how far down the slip and slide you go, and the number of feet that you make it down the slip and slide is the number you would have rolled on a D10.
Yes, all of these sound great.
Yeah, there's another one where in order to accomplish a skill roll, you have to complete and win a single game of Mousetrap.
Yeah, there's one where you have to play an entire game of Magic the Gathering in order to do anything. This includes swinging your sword once.
It's called Magic the Gathering.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good game.
It's pretty decent.
So look into it. This is us, bringing the little games to your attention that no one's ever heard of.
Yeah. All of these little indie games, you probably haven't heard of them.
I'm still supporting Magic the Gathering on Kickstarter. I like to kick him a couple of bucks every now and then, so they have some walking around money. Okay, so realistically, I actually like the concept of dread.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, I love the idea of just playing Jenga as your mechanic.
So dread is an RPG that is a horror game. And so you don't really have a character sheet beyond sort of a list of your fears. You basically answer a couple of questions in a questionnaire to build what sort of horror person or horror movie character you are. And then in order to resolve anything, you pull a tile from a Jenga tower.
Yeah. And it, just like in a lot of like rising dread things, you've got the beginning of it is sort of easy. There's not a lot of tension. You know, you'll joke about like, oh, what if like my first pull I knocked the whole tower down? But you're going to get through the beginning of the game fairly quickly and easily. However, once you get later into the game, every time you try to accomplish anything, there's just this horrible racking fear that you are going to fuck everything up.
Yeah. So I think that's a great concept for actually building Mounting Dread.
Yeah.
I think it's a solid idea. I have not tried it yet. I've read about it a couple of times, and I've listened to friends of the show, One Shot RPG. They do that from time to time, their podcast. That's one of the ones they do because they're so improv-y over there that a game where there's literally just one easy rule is a great idea.
Yeah, those fucking improv-y people. You stick to a script like a real professional, like
God
us.
God damn it. Yeah, that's how we do. Everything we do here is written out in advance.
Everything.
Yeah, we're guild screenwriters over here. Both of us.
Yeah.
I'm currently working on a Spider-Man script.
Aw, why would you do that?
Because I hate myself.
Poor Spider-Man.
Guess what? It's an origin story.
Oh, finally. We'll finally find out what happened with Peter Parker.
Did you know that with great power comes great responsibility? Let me tell you about his Uncle Ben and how he died.
Hey, man.
Horrible race accident. All right. Okay. So, we both enjoy the dread concept, I think. I think that's a really good idea for a gimmick that literally builds dread. So, I'm looking forward to trying that game. If you're in San Diego and you want to play it, tweet at System Mastery.
Yeah. We want to play Jenga with you.
That's right. That's what we want to play with you.
Yeah. Just Jenga. That's all.
Just a little Jenga.
Yeah. Just, I think the Jenga game would go a lot better if you just unbutton that top button.
Oh, now you're getting creepy. Okay. Next question. And we have a couple questions coming to us from a John.
Woo!
A different John.
Yeah. It's weird because it's such a uncommon name. You normally wouldn't find that around there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's super weird.
It's unusual. Okay. What are your deal breakers in terms of game design elements, and what are things you like to see? For example, I already know you're not very keen on the way most merit flaw systems are implemented. That's just me, actually. I think John doesn't care about them. Are there any other sacred cows you'd like to see slaughtered? And on the other side, are there any golden calves that you treasure? Well, I do treasure the film Golden Child. I don't know about Golden Calf, but Golden Child, I celebrate the oof.
Well, I mean, I do worship a golden calf.
Oh, well, there's
it
that.
It is my god.
Yeah, that is true. It's even labeled false idol on the bottom, which is weird.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
It was made in False Idol, Idaho.
False Idaho.
Oh, Idaho. Yeah, that's what it
is. Well, Idaho's a real place. We're talking about False Idaho.
Yeah.
Okay. Deal breakers in terms of game design elements. Go ahead.
So, probably one of the worst ones is sticking to something D&D did just for the sake of D&D doing it.
Ooh, yeah.
So if you're like, what do you have? I have six stats and you roll 3d6 for your stats, but those stats don't matter to your game as much. Like, you look at something like most of the modern D&D even, and it basically boils down to, I've got a plus one or a plus two or a minus one. And it really doesn't need to be a scale between like 3 and 18, because it's all going to boil down to, I have maybe a plus one or two in something, or generally a zero, maybe a minus one.
I'm going to say one that is near ubiquitous in every single game ever, and I still don't like it very much. And it's not Merits and Flaws, because it was taken away from me in the question. But I don't like it when players get a plus one to hit at the exact same time that monsters get a plus one to armor forever.
Ah.
So that even though your character keeps getting bigger, all the monsters just get equally bigger. So all you're doing is adding higher numbers to your d20.
Well, yeah. Well, at that point, basically, it's just there as a nice little pat on the head because humans like to see numbers go up.
Yeah, that's all it is. And once you've played enough role-playing games, you see right through it and it looks silly. I like games that go broad instead of going steep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all. I like a game where you get more powers instead of getting one power better. Because when the monster defense increases at the same rate, you're fooling yourself. You're not really rolling a bigger number. You're still rolling the same old d20.
Yeah, it's true.
So, that's the thing for me. I mean, it's not like I think it needs to be destroyed. I've gotten kind of tired of it. I think it's an older thing in game design that doesn't really need to be there anymore. Or it needs to be reduced. I think there are certain games that have done a good job of keeping that in the system, but reducing it, like, Iron Kingdoms, for example, the highest you can ever get is like a plus four to hit. It's not like every time you gain a level, you get another plus one. It just,
oh, yeah.
So it's not bad. Things that we treasure in game design, that seems like it's kind of a bigger question. Like, what do we love about games?
Okay, see, now I've got an answer for this that's, okay, not something that I think is a good design idea.
Oh, but a bad idea is that you like.
But something I like and that really has fallen out of style is the other big thing. Is you don't see it a lot anymore, but it used to be everywhere. And that is the random encounter table. I love the idea of random encounter tables because in a lot of games it'll just absolutely fuck your shit up. Because you can have a random encounter table that is like, all right, you're walking around and you're a level 2 party. You meet 2d8 ogres and you're like, what the fuck? This is going to murder us. And you're like, yeah, well, don't fight them. Run away from them. Whatever. But the fact that the random encounter tables used to be everywhere and are no longer in any game at all, I feel is kind of sad. I like the idea of, I'm feeling bored and lazy as a DM and I roll some dice and this is what you find. Like, that's just great to me.
That's just because you're always feeling bored and lazy.
Oh, yes.
Okay, fine. It's a perfect thing for you because it caters to you. I can see that. That makes
sense. Most of the time my encounters are just improv'd anyway. So the fact that I can go, I roll on a random encounter and something happens, and then I have to come up with a justification in my own mind for why it's happening.
Okay, I'm going to say the major thing I miss that has been mostly removed from games, it's specifically a D&D thing that's gone, is the overly complicated generic cosmology. Man, I used to spend hours memorizing the positions of all the outer planes, and then all those weird interactive inner planes where it's like, what happens when the plane of steam borders on the plane of lightning? It creates the demiplane of plasma.
What happens when the plane of grease meets the plane of lightning?
Magic.
Yeah.
So there you go. I like that. Granted, 90% of the stuff they put out was useless. You can't go to the plane of vacuum.
No. It's the plane of ash is completely useless.
Yeah.
Honestly, the fucking plane of fire is useless because you're like, what happened? You go there, you're on fire. Yay.
The end. I mean, granted, there's really cool stuff in the plane of fire. Don't get me wrong. The city of brass is there. There's whole gene cities and salamander cities, all kinds of cool stuff. But a lot of it is useless. There's a lot of cruft. I still love it. I still love that. It was one of my favorite things to read as a kid. So that's my golden calf that I miss. Okay. And we have a few more questions here. We've got coming from Daniel. What are your favorite movies? First of all, Let me thank Daniel for being the first to ask us a question that's not about role-playing games.
Yay, you did it.
We really want that. We want you to send questions to Afterthought that have nothing to do with RPGs.
Please let us ramble about dumb shit that doesn't matter and has nothing to do with why you're listening to us.
That's exactly right. Just anything. Any old question. Ask us would-you-rather scenarios.
Yeah. Just give us an entire game of Never Have I Ever.
Perfect. Anyway, favorite movies. John, take it away.
Well, it's always going to depend on the genre of what we're talking about, because there are ones that...
Genres, movies.
Yeah. Good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I'm glad I could help.
I thought for a second there I was going to have to talk about my favorite radio programs.
Also, yes.
Yeah. All right.
Second question from Daniel. Favorite radio programs and genre is...
Well, that's obviously Charlie. He's my favorite ventriloquist act.
Oh, I like Prairie Home Companion.
Aw. Yeah. Aw, you would, you boring son of a... Bitch.
That's great. Have you ever heard of the good news about powdered milk biscuits? There's so many Lutherans on that show. They're just so happy being in third place. Oh, my. Oh, and the alcohol is frozen right into the ice cubes.
Here are cheese dudes. The alcohol is frozen right into our cheese.
Flash frozen alcohol. Now in every cheese dude. Also, try a steaming plate of empanadudes.
Okay, favorite movies. So for things that are more like serious drama, Requiem for a Dream is amazing.
Terrible.
And you should never watch it.
Don't watch it. Terrible.
No, it is an absolutely amazing movie. Do not watch it.
Yeah, I know, I'm doing a bit. All your movies are terrible.
That's also true.
Yeah.
For comedies, The Big Lebowski is fucking amazing.
God damn it, don't make me say The Big Lebowski is terrible.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, and Ghostbusters. Come on, motherfucker, say Ghostbusters is awful.
Ghostbusters 2 is awful.
That's not true. It has Peter McNichol in it. It's magic.
God damn it. I almost like it more. Paul Feig's Ghostbusters all-female version is probably awful. How's that?
How
mostly because of Paul Feig.
Meh. And then for horror, I'm a huge horror film nut. I watch a shitload of horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best ones, period, is The Thing. It is just an amazing fucking movie.
It's really, really good.
So I'll go ahead and say that. I'll just go ahead and say Big Lebowski, The Thing, and Requiem for a Dream. Those will be my top three.
Sure.
Just throw those.
Yeah, no, tie them all together thematically.
Yeah. They all had a rug. That really tied them together thematically.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay, I am a huge fan of musical theater. And so my favorite movies are stupid movies that aren't anyone's favorites. I really like Moulin Rouge.
Dude, Moulin Rouge is awesome.
I know. You don't tell me. It's consistently my favorite movie. I also particularly enjoy the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, God, why?
Because it's really good. The songs are amazing. Also, Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, Jesus Christ Superstar is wonderful. Right. I will give you that.
Yeah, you have to give me that, because it's objectively correct.
Yeah. And what then to do about this Jesus mania?
How do we deal with the Carpenter King? See, now, it saddens me that you'll do that, but you won't join me on, like, a touch me.
No, that's crap. Now, if we're talking about Joseph and his amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat...
No, we're talking about the Time Warp. Will you get in on some Time Warp?
No. Oh. Negative.
Okay, well, there we go. I also really like Grease. But, I mean, granted, I'd have to say, since one of my favorite genres is musicals, and of that genre, I think Moulin Rouge is my favorite, but nothing's ever going to replace Rocky Horror in my heart. I also really enjoy the original Empire Strikes Back. And otherwise, I think my favorite comedy movie is going to have to be History of the World Part 1.
Hmm. That's weird.
I love that movie.
All right.
It's great. I mean, it's great. It's got a little of the Mel Brooks kind of overindulgence.
Yeah.
He has a tendency every once in a while when it's clear he's run out of stuff to... Oh, you know what? I'm actually going to replace it with Airplane anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
See, that's a way better choice.
Airplane is an insanely good movie, and everyone needs to watch it again right now.
Yeah. Also, Airplane 2. Which is just Airplane,
same
but
movie,
in space.
Made by different people and slightly worse. It's the same,
it is the generic knockoff version of Airplane.
Did you forget some of the jokes of Airplane? Don't worry, they're in Airplane too.
All of them.
Oh, yeah. So Airplane's an amazing movie. Now, speaking of History of the World Part 1, every once in a while you get this problem where Mel Brooks clearly ran out of stuff to do, so he's just like, oh, I know a guy who does a bit, let's just bring him in. Like there's that, the dude who's dancing on the steps in ancient Rome and that, and he's, Like, he's just doing black guy comedy from the 70s.
Yeah.
That's just like, what are you doing here? Oh, well, I have a 5-minute chunk that I can do on command. So they put me in a robe and they just said, do your chunk.
Yay.
That's what you get whenever you cast, like, Larry the Cable Guy in a movie. You get his chunk. That's what you get.
Aw, I am not a fan of Larry the Cable Guy's chunk.
Are we saying that's a part of him, or is it a food product that he endorses?
Yes.
Well, now you all come on down and try this here chunk by Larry the Cable Guy.
Get her done off of me!
Made by my Mole sister.
Mole sister.
Oh, man, Mole sister flavored chunk.
Now being served at Cheese Dudes.
No, never. All right, we got one last question that showed up while we were recording the podcast. We took a bathroom break, and wouldn't you know it, there was an email for us. So,
goodness gracious.
So a question from one Mr. Nick E. Cheeses.
Oh, Nick E. Cheeses, damn you, you son of a bitch restaurant.
You absorbed our joke.
And have made it yourself.
Rolling with it, that's amazing. And this is a good one, because I was curious about this a few weeks ago, too. What qualities make a system a heat breaker? Oh, I'm sorry, heartbreaker. How can an aspiring game writer avoid that label? Should novel mechanics and themes be shelved in favor of established rule sets like D&D or broad systems like Fate?
Heartbreaker is really more if the... It's not that the systems are different. It's that you obviously poured yourself into something without giving it enough thought.
The original definition of Heartbreaker is from like a Forge article. And it's basically a guy calling out a bunch of games that are D&D-esque. That, you know, Dark Earth was one of them. And it's why we ended up being on that episode of Critical Success, the RPG, where we discussed Heartbreakers, is because we had done a review of Dark Earth, which is a famous Heartbreaker. The original definition was games that are very clearly D&D with some of the serial numbers filed off.
Yeah.
And I feel like on this show, we've kind of expanded that definition for ourselves to be any game that's got very clear roots, wears its heart on its sleeve, and you can really see the influences of a singular designer.
Yeah, so like Heaven and Earth was very much a heartbreaker. It was, the writer was in every single page,
mm-hmm.
and you could tell that he had read a lot of the early White Wolf books, and that had influenced a lot of his decisions there.
Yeah.
So Heaven and Earth was basically a White Wolf storyteller system heartbreaker, but using cards instead of dice.
Yeah. And it didn't necessarily have to be copying a thing. Like, there wasn't really a Twin Peaks RPG I knew of before that. Except for the Twin Peaks RPG, which we'll cover next year sometime in April.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, give or take.
Yeah.
So, but it's still very, to us on this show, it feels like a heartbreaker because you can see where it broke his heart. He poured his heart onto the page. Now, again, Heaven and Earth, apparently a highly successful RPG, currently on its third edition.
Yeah.
But that one in particular has this look of a lot of personal decisions being made. A lot of damn the editors being made.
Yeah, I think avoiding heartbreaker status is if you have a tight system that works for whatever you're trying to do.
If it looks like you workshopped it a little bit, avoiding that heartbreaker label.
It doesn't need to be like specifically like D&D or specifically like Fate or specifically like anything. As long as your rules work for the game you're trying to make.
Right.
If you're trying to make a game that is very crunch-heavy, lots of rolling dice, things like that, and it tends to look a little like D&D because you have to roll a whole bunch, and you've got a bunch of different skills and stats and classes, that's just going to be a natural comparison people will make. But it's not really a heartbreaker unless you look like D&D, but you tried to change some things around and failed.
Yeah, so to avoid the label, I'll give you a couple of quick tips for avoiding the label heartbreaker. First of all, game test your work. When you've got your game playable, play it. Get some friends, play that game. Take their advice for the changes. Because they're going to give you some advice that will help improve the game. They'll make it more fun and less unplayable.
Yeah.
So a lot of taking advice, a lot of listening to editors, a lot of listening to friends. A lot of workshopping is the major difference between a good game and a unplayable heartbreaker, which is mostly a footnote.
Yeah, essentially, don't be married to any given mechanic. You can be married to an idea for your, like, your
world. America. Yeah,
Thanks, Obama, for this great RPG you gave me.
Making it okay for me to marry my RPGs.
What's next? So, if you have an idea for, this is the world I want to build, you can be married to a concept like that, but if you start going...
That's what's next right there, marrying concepts.
Yeah. But if you start going into, I can't get around the idea that we should have, like, rolling more than 2d6. Like, your players might come back to you and go, actually, for a lot of things, I think either some different dice or rolling 3d6 or whatever would make the math work better, or it would feel better as a player. If you don't listen to things that your testers say because you like something and you're unwilling to budge, you're probably going to veer into Heartbreaker.
Yeah, and for the final question there, which is, should novel mechanics and themes be shelved in favor of established rule sets like D&D? No, D&D's broken.
Oh, yeah.
It has been for years. There's problems with every single edition. I mean, we're both kind of 4th edition boosters here. Like, not enough that we want to fight about it, but we kind of like it. And
we'll fight you about it.
But we will also point out that it's terrible.
Oh, yeah.
It's every edition of D&D is broken. Fate is probably a little too broad. So, no, write your own systems. Hell, we did that like a week ago.
Yeah, and it was terrible.
We wrote a crappy Duckman game, and it's awful. And now we're millionaires.
That's what happens.
I know.
Game designers, all you need to do is just get a game out there. Instant money.
Oh, yeah. We're recording this on a jet.
We're not even flying anywhere. We're just on top of a jet.
Yeah. No, you can get on top of a jet when you have Rodan RPG money.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. RPG money is my new name, by the way. That's... I rap under that label. That's what I can do now. I'm rich enough that I can just do white guy rap, and it's okay.
Oh, yeah. It's not even cultural appropriation. I'm that rich.
Yeah. No, not at all. I can buy my way out of that. It's like carbon footprint. So, yeah. No, write new systems. The world needs them.
Yes, please.
We need them. Write really terrible ones, because we need them.
Yes, please. Please write a shitty novel game that will give us about an hour to talk about.
Thank you. In 10 years, when the show's still on the air and we're all old and decrepit.
Are
more.
There we go.
More old and decrepit.
Yeah.
Okay, so that has been all of the questions that we have for today, which is good, because we're wrapping up on time anyway.
Whoop!
So, as always, if you have something you'd like us to discuss on one of these Afterthought episodes, send us a question. If you want us to just answer it in the Q&A section, try and make it about something that isn't role-playing games, because we want to talk about all kinds of random other stuff instead. As you can probably tell by now. Otherwise, if you have a big question, maybe we'll make it the theme of the episode. We'll run out of themes eventually.
Yeah, you know, if you've got a question like, why do bad things happen to good people? Go ahead and send it to us.
Send us questions like that. The big stuff. Ask us what you're doing with your life. Ask us for relationship advice.
Sure, why not?
Recipes. But until then, thank you for listening to Afterthought. You can find us at SystemMasteryPodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Stitcher or iTunes. Download our podcast wherever fine books are sold. And enjoy. Thank you, and have a lovely week.
And coming up next, 5 hours of POD.